Hi, my name is Mira Patasin. I'm an author and I'm an activist, and GoFundMe is my go-to platform for fundraising. The first GoFundMe I did was to raise money for a chapbook or a collection of poetry and essays and short stories. So we started a GoFundMe and our goal was $7,000. What I've learned is so special about GoFundMe is that it's a whole collection of people offering anything from like $4 to $400. And each time you get a ping that someone donated, even if it is just $4, it's so exciting. So if you have a goal and you get there, you can keep making it bigger and bigger and bigger. We did go past our goal. It was amazing.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Well, welcome back to the Last Storyteller Podcast. My name is Jim, and I'm your host today. And today, I'm going to spend some time talking to you about something that happens to, I think, all writers, and that's when you're moving along at a pretty good pace, and all of a sudden, something just stops. Something interrupts where you're at. And then what do you do at that point, or what do I do at that point? Well, I think people do these things different ways all the time. I wrote a story one time, a short story called Writer's Block. And that was kind of absurd to look at it, but I know that they get it. And I'm not really talking today about writer's block, though. I'm just talking about when you come to that point and it stops. Now, what do you do? Well, I'm going to share with you what I do. Maybe it'll help any writers out there. Or maybe you'll just enjoy this short story. It's not very long. About what I do. I'm going to welcome you to not only the podcast today, but I'm going to take you out virtually to my back porch. So my back porch is where I go when I'm writing to just sit outside with a cup of coffee. I look at what used to be a cornfield across from me. And now it's really nothing but a weed field since the farmer died or moved on or something. But it's still a place to go and just relax. And I concentrate on one thing. I think about one thing when I'm out there, and it's the characters in the story that I'm writing. I don't work on a plot line or dialogue. I just think about the characters. And while I'm out there thinking about those characters, I'm trying to develop a character that's a good character. Not necessarily a good person, but a good character. See, I think when we're reading, I know when I do, there's characters that what you wish you knew in real life. And then there's those characters that, well, you wish that maybe you could just kick their butt in real life, and then all the ones in between. And that's what I use that time for. Sometimes, though, even when I'm thinking about that, something else pops up. It's those something else's that I want to talk to you about today. Because as a writer, when something pops up, sometimes it becomes a story. And in my short story, The Last Storyteller, the old storyteller is talking to a young boy, and he tells him at one point that everything has a story and it just needs someone to tell it. Well, I do believe that everything has a story. I wrote a story one time, very short, flash fiction, if you will, about a paper clip. I never put it in writing anywhere other than on a file that's on my computer on stories yet to be finished. But I wrote about 500 words based on seeing a paperclip one day. Sometimes they turn into more than that. More than just a file that rots away somewhere, forgotten all about. And I was reminded of that again today when I had an eye doctor's appointment. I got a cataract in my right eye that needs to be taken care of. And a few years ago, it was in my left eye. And I remember on that doctor's appointment, he talked about floaters. Well, I knew what floaters were, and I was experiencing them. But because he's a doctor, he talked to me about it from a medical point of view, the scientific reason that I have floaters and what's truly happening. And I didn't really want to know any of that stuff, but I listened to him. And by the time I left his office, or I should say from the time I left his office to until I got back home, which is only about 15 minutes, I live in a small town, a story was born based on floaters. And that's what the story was called. It was called Floaters. And it's a strange story, there's no doubt about it. But I had it all finished just inside my head. And all I had to do is go home and sit down at the typewriter and write it. Now, as a warning to you, if you're at the age right now where you're dealing with cataracts, you're dealing with floaters, I wouldn't recommend reading that story until you get your own cataracts taken care of. But that's not the story that I was really going to talk to you about today. It's a short story that I wrote a few years ago. And it came about on doing something that I do every day. It's rather mundane. And it was getting a cup of coffee. Well, that morning, it happened to be on my way to church. And I stopped in a gas station. And this story was born when I met the clerk there. And from the time I left, again, from the time I left that gas station to the time I arrived at church, that story had become one that I needed to tell. And this is that story. I stopped at the gas station on the way into church for a quick cup of hot coffee. Gas station coffee is never very good. But caffeine was on this morning's must-to-do list. And so I stopped. It wasn't a gas station I normally stopped at, but I had passed mine up, not thinking, and I needed that coffee. So I walk into this place, and there's a young girl, X-generation, Z-generation, whatever generation she was, that was standing at the counter as I walked over to the coffee machine. It was hard not to notice her because of the way she looked. She had, I guess, hair that was the color of purple or grape Kool-Aid. She had tattoos on the side of her neck, down both arms, and one small, what looked like maybe a heart, a broken heart, on the side of her face. And then she had some metal in her nose and on her eyebrows. And she was just different. You know, I wasn't judging her, but it's hard not to notice. And I think that's what they do, maybe that's one of the reasons why they do it. They want to be noticed. But I went and I got my coffee and I came back up to the counter. She looks at me and asks me, "Is that all this morning?" I mumbled yes and I laid $3 on the counter. And then she asked me, "Are you on the way to church?" "Well, yes, I am," I replied, surprised a little bit by her inquiry. "Gotta fill your tank. Fill it with Jesus juice," she proclaims as she hands me my change. "What? Jesus juice? I don't believe I'd ever heard this unusual phrase, much less ever considered that I was filling my tank with it." This oh-so-brief conversation stayed with me on the long drive into San Antonio. In fact, it would be with me all morning. All through an inspired Bible study on moral issues, that clerk's words rang in my ears. When the church service began, with the guest musical chorale from Atlanta, Georgia, singing beautifully praise songs, I enjoyed the music, I listened to the music, all the while I continued to consider Jesus juice. When the preaching began, I thought that surely this moment in time, spent in a small Texas gas station on I-35, would begin to fade away, but it didn't. When the Mercer University Youth closed us in song, sung so perfectly that I believe the angels in heaven stopped to listen. The mental picture of a tank filled with Jesus juice stayed with me. It had taken form all morning long, and finally, as the final amens were said, it was clear in my mind's eye. What was suddenly so clear was also a memory from the previous Sunday. You see, that Sunday school class had also been inspirational. The music just as uplifting, and the preaching was God's word. So why did I feel like my tank needed to be refilled? Where had the Jesus juice gone in just 7 days? Why did I feel empty going in and full coming out? And it wasn't just the previous Sunday. It was the Sunday before that, the Sunday before that, and the Sunday before that. What happens to our tanks between Sundays? Well, it's easy to blame some evaporation of the Jesus juice on the world we live in. Sadly, our world doesn't always see God Monday through Saturday. But then I guess neither do we. Maybe some of the juice is burnt up by an emotional train that speeds through our week, requiring us to expend more of it than normal. Perhaps like a thief in the night, people we know and even love siphon off our tanks for their own use. You see, it's pretty easy to place blame on someone else for my own empty tank. It's pretty easy to justify the need to refill every Sunday morning by proclaiming that I had a bad week. Now, I always try to be honest to the person in the mirror. And I try to be just as honest to those who show me care by reading my words. So honestly, I think I lose most of that Jesus juice by poking holes in my own tank. Each time I make the wrong decision, self-centered instead of Christ-centered, I drive a nail through the lining of that tank, letting the juice just seep out. As the tank level lessens, it becomes easier to jab and jab again, making more hose, releasing more of Christ. Sometimes by Saturday night, the only thing that remains are fumes, just enough to get me to go back to church, where I sputter in, anticipating, needing, praying for more Jesus juice. Now you see, God, he's going to let me go on in this wasteful pattern as long as I'm stupid enough to do so. He loves me that much. He also loves me enough to remind me that although I may think that my tank is empty, it never really is. He said, "Never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you." It's unconditional. He said, "No one can snatch them out of my hand." It's unending. It's finished. It's love. It's not Jesus juice. Well, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. I need a cup of coffee. We'll see you next time.